honest, yet it took me a long time to get here.
Both parents have spoken with each other, and they regret what happened. They've had a frank discussion with each other, and they're both of them are keen to now focus on getting back their county jerseys.
That these fellas will get such a f***ing shell shock next Saturday evening that we'll put them back in their f***ing asses for f***ing 10 years.
So we have Paddy Cunningham coming up on the show today, lads. Antrim corner forward, very, very good player. In 2009, Paddy Cunningham scored 11 points against Tyrone in an Ulster final, 5 from play. Nothing shabby about that. He retired when he was 28. Said, well, he didn't retire. He was going to take a year out when he was 28. Took a year out. A year out turned into 6. Lenny Harbison, the Antrim manager, got back onto him this year. So he's made his comeback at 34. And he's not just 34 in the last month. He's 35 this year. So there's hope for us all, Ger. We might see you back here, Ger. Like, I mean, this year, just a year out of Vincent's, are you?
I never have officially retired, I don't think.
Neither did I. I
said, I'm still waiting for the call.
Keep getting overlooked here, Ger, don't we? Like, this is a joke. So, yeah, he's battling Crohn's disease as well. So, like, I mean, keep listening to that interview. He's a very impressive fella. So that's coming up in part two. Do I want to start here is with DCU, Jared. The enemy won their first in 5 years. I was surprised to read that. Like, I mean, they dominated for a good few years because I suppose they'd given out about 150 scholarships and no one else could compete with them. So how did they fall off the... How are they only winning their first in five now?
I started working in UCD about 5 years ago.
Well, UCD took over. UCD couldn't win one for years then as well, couldn't they?
I think it was 20 years... between UCD's last one in 1996 and the one we won 2016. Now, a lot of things happen. You get a good crop of players come in at one time. You had Stephen Cohen from Mayo, you had Jack McCaffrey, Conor McCarthy, Paul Mannion, a host of other names, Jack Barry as well.
Did you increase your scholarships or was it just a good crop of lads?
Just a good crop of lads came in. Depending on the educational institution, we could be here all day, and the strategy that the universities would employ to build the profile of the college. UCD was certainly well established going back to 1880 something, and it's very much academic based, so it's quite difficult to get into UCD, and the number of scholarships we would have is limited because it's a holistic approach to sport. Other universities, newer universities, would have had to think outside the box, and something that DCU have done extremely well, in fairness to them, is they put a lot of emphasis on the development of Gaelic games and athletics over the last 10, 20 years. And
but is it fair that everyone on the DCU team can be on a scholarship when that doesn't apply to another college?
It doesn't bother me.
Right.
It's for the rest of us to try to match what they're doing as best we can.
Yeah.
Financially, every team doesn't have the same resources. So, again, we have to think outside the box. How can we generate team spirit? How can we improve our own tactics and preparation of teams? So I've never bothered with those type of things.
Right.
Money will only get you so far.
So it was Tralee IT that started all this, and I got on that gravy train down there in 1999. I didn't get a lot of money from, but they were able to pay my rent and stuff, and I was kind of at a loose end. I had dropped out of my second college and I went down to Tralee and did advanced tourism down there. And
How's that going?
It was fantastic. I learned so much. It was funny to get into the course. It was government funded, so you're paid every week if you went in. It was based on, so I got deregistered because I didn't go in, but I had to do an interview to get into the course. So I told them in the interview that I was opening up a B&B. My mother's, we're renovating my mother's house, and I had to list the tourist attractions in Laois. Why would they be interested in your B&B? Well, there's the Rock of Dunamase. There's nothing in Laois. They believe me anyway, my lies. So I got into the college. And
look at you now.
There you go. That B&B never really took off, but that was it. And Tralee were doing that at the time and won 3 Sigerson's in a row. And then Sligo IT started doing something similar. And, you know, DCU came in then and took it to a whole other level. So I'm not going to judge colleges for doing it. I just, like, there was players in DCU not even on the starting team on scholarships. Like, they were throwing them around like nobody's business, no?
Look at it. And when you get to the Sigerson or Fitzgibbon level, look, there's only 15 fellas that you can put on the field. So if you have a number of freshers and scholarships, second and third years and scholarships, you just can't play them all. So inevitably, if you look at the number of students, say in UCD, there's 25,000 students now. There's about 5,000 or 6,000 would be international students. So you just have to kind of make ends meet. But
how did DCU afford it? They have outside sponsors, obviously, to be able. You don't know the answer to
that. No, I don't know, but I. to be balanced and to give credit to DCU and Paul O'Brien and a couple of other guys involved in run the GA club there. They put an awful lot of work in and they're nearly, while we're competitive competitors in terms of when we play against each other, we're kind of nearly colleagues in a way in developing Gaelic games.
In
third level, but Paul would put in and good leash man in there now with him as well.
Ross Munley. No, he's over recruitment, isn't
Ross
he?
Ross is there. What's odd? Referee, played with Plunkett's.
David Sweeney.
David Sweeney's taken up a role there this year as well. So, and Michael Kennedy then from Tyrone was there before that. So, an awful lot of work goes in to recruiting guys, getting guys playing for each other, conversations with county managers, disagreements with county managers, and trying to ensure that the prestige and the prominence that third level football and hurling should have remains, you know. Yeah. So it's a constant challenge. But now, again, for me, I've never bothered too much about the money side of things. Well, you can only put 15 guys on the field.
You would say that being a dub, right, with all this game development money you're getting, right? So you have to be consistent about this, Ger, right?
I don't know. I'll send it on to you later. But Kieran Cunningham in the Star did a piece with me actually before the All-Ireland final last year, but he only put out, I think, is it... I don't know, is it a competitor website, but Buzz, I don't know.
It's there online.
But in between the two canals in Dublin, there's roughly 160,000 people based in the last census, and there's only two GA clubs. So on the north side, St. Joseph's O'Connell Boys, who my dad's actually chairman, down in Seville Place, they have a hurling team and a football team. And then Kevin's Hurling Club, which is based around Sin Street, and my godfather, Jerry, his juvenile chairman, where he was for a while, and they would share grounds with Temple Oak,
Sing Street
with the football. Yeah. So when you look at it like that, it's scary.
Where's this game's development money being spent then, is the question I want to know. Where's this going? Into a black hole?
It's a whole other show.
Okay. Yeah, we'll get sidetracked here. But I wanted to talk about the schedule these lads have now, right? So they've 7 games in 9 weeks. And that wasn't the case when I was playing. It was more spread out. Even when I started playing, you'd play 3 games before Christmas and then a few after Christmas. You must be like a professional athlete, Ger. Like, I mean, they'd be doing nothing during the week, I presume, other than a recovery. They'll do their own recovery Monday. They'll do a pitch recovery Tuesday. And then maybe, I don't know, what would you do on Thursday? What would your week be like? Because, like, Donegal are picking up injuries. Ryan McHugh, Caelan McGonigal and Neil McGee all limped off last week. So I presume just getting them right is a big priority during the week.
And I know we talked about the demands on up-and-coming GA players a couple of podcasts ago. I think Pat Spillane had a piece in the Sunday World about a young lad pre-Christmas not being able to drink at the wedding.
Yeah. I was talking to somebody about that. Yeah. That one player might have been out the night before and going out the night after. He just had to, on that wedding.
That didn't help Pat's story, though.
No, that did not help Pat's story. And I wouldn't mind. I kind of went along with Pat's story until I actually spoke to someone involved with Kerry. Listen, we were allowed out all over Christmas. Don't be silly. The night before, you wouldn't go out because you're not stupid. Yeah. But we were out. Don't worry about that. Yeah. Basically, I wanted to clear that up.
It's about a balance. I suppose as I came to the end of my own career, the sports science and information we were getting in how to mind yourself in the off-season was a massive change to how it was when it would have started in 2006, where you wintered well, you put on the guts of a stone. Certainly my body type, I'd put on the guts of a stone, and then you just run it off in your Bourne Cup games, and then you run more off then come the National League, but you got bigger breaks in the National League.
Yeah.
And then you're into your championship campaign, and you should be as lean as you would like to be. So in order to avoid injuries now and the demands that are put on players, your off season is kind of a measured off season. It's not a case of letting yourself go too much, and that when you do come back into the pre season campaign with the intercounty team and the increase in training load, your body isn't totally shocked, and then you don't have as many injuries. So recovery protocols is a big thing, and there's a big science behind that and the way in which you recover. So for argument's sake, if I love jumping into the sea, what's the positives of jumping into the sea? Again, we've all done it in terms of how refreshed you feel coming out of it. Another fella, like, I actually have no interest in jumping into the sea. That's actually going to stress me out further. I'd much rather stay in bed. But then he should probably stay in bed.
Right.
So it's whatever helps you relax is what you should go
but
and do.
But it is tailored individually, danger, as opposed to saying, well, everybody needs to jump in the sea or everybody needs to do their own method. You know, it's holistic enough that you can say to one person, you do what works for you. And rather than saying that it's a catch-all approach.
Exactly. I personally would have always gone for a 10, 15 minute, very, 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 very slow jog bit of a stretch and I jump in the sea for 10 minutes and I was happy enough with that. But I definitely know other lads who like that would just torment them and they'd be just stressed out even further. So the recovery might start a couple of hours later. So it's whatever suits every individual.
I always remember back years ago that when you'd be out on a night out, even if it was a team bonding session, the manager would get you up at 7 a.m. the next morning and say, "This'll do you the world of good, run that beer out of you." And I was thinking to myself, another 4 hours in bed would do me an awful lot better. Like, I'm surely physiologically getting up early with no sleep, dehydrated and doing a long run has to be counterproductive for your body.
Yeah, but it's the psychological.
Run the shite out of you and I will run that beer out of you.
Even scientifically, wasn't it the Clare Hurling team that used to do those runs up the hill? Like, I'm sure, like, scientifically now they're looking at that thinking, geez, that's the worst thing you could
do. That's psychological.
But obviously guaranteed, like, any member of the Clare team you'll talk about, they'll remember that they'll remember how much you contributed. I imagine it's the same with, geez, lads, remember we had that great night out, but we were up at 7 o'clock next morning.
We'll sweat the beer out of you. This was meant to be an old cliche, isn't it?
There was a weekend away a good few years ago. Can't tell any names or anything like that, but again, we were up at seven the next morning, and a few of us, and I was probably still in the early stages of trying to become established in the squad. So we're kind of waiting in the lobby, and all of a sudden, you see one or two lads come down the stairs, and then you see a couple of other people of the opposite sex also coming down the stairs at different times, and you're probably thinking, I say those lads a couple of more hours in bed now and they'd be fine. But I don't think you can say that here.
They would have appreciated a couple of more hours in bed.
But here's Turlough O'Brien mentioned this, and it's fairly obvious, but I was just thinking, he was talking about the Saturday night games. He says, Saturday night football is great as it allows players to recover the next day. If we're playing Sunday football, then we'd be back to work or college the following day. I think the supporters like Saturday nights as well. He's talking about Saturday night matches. But then I was thinking, we call them amateurs, but if you have a Saturday night game, you're pretty much a professional on Sunday. You'll get up, you'll do your recovery, you'll lie in, and then you'll put your feet up on the couch and watch TG Cahir matches for the day.
Yeah.
Like, a team with a match on a Saturday night has an advantage the following week against a team that has a match on a Sunday. Am I reading too much into it? Maybe not in week one, but in around week five, you know, it might have a bit of an advantage.
Well, the extra day for a start, and then the fact that they're able to do that.
It's a professional recovery.
Yeah, absolutely. But like, they don't have the people that have to go into work on Monday. They don't have the option of doing that. They'll have to find the time on the Monday to recover. And then they're looking at an extra less day. They're probably going in training the following night, as opposed to somebody who's played the Saturday night and then looking at a couple of days off before they go into training. Yeah. So it's definitely an advantage over the long run. And then you'll find that, like, the likes of, not that I'm saying the Dublin don't have advantages or anything like that, but they'll probably play more games than Saturday night because they're going to be on TV and the televised games are on Saturday night as well. So I'd say over the course of a league, if you talk to somebody involved in the S&C or the science side of it, they'll say to you, yeah, we definitely benefited from having more games on Saturday night than a Sunday.
It makes sense, doesn't it?
Well, absolutely makes sense. And even as a player, to have that Sunday off, I know you are doing your recovery, as you mentioned, but as opposed to going into workers' college then on a Monday morning, and even the quality of the training session probably on the Tuesday evening, you can probably do that bit more tactically in terms of preparing for the game coming up the following weekend. I know television rights and sponsors, that they want to spread things out a bit, which is understandable, but I suppose on average you probably play maybe the same on the games of a Sunday and the same on the games of a Saturday, but it definitely, as an amateur player,
I don't know. I think I think Laois play most Saturday night game home games. Dublin play most Saturday night games. I think if you have the lights, everybody, Armagh are starting to play their home games Saturday night. I think most counties are going for the preference. There's so many more. It's nearly split 50-50 now on Saturday and Sunday, isn't it?
It would be interesting to look at the gate receipts of people attending of a Saturday evening versus Sunday.
Yeah.
And we probably would all agree that most people enjoy going to a Saturday game, have a few beers before or after.
Yeah.
Something to do for the evening. And I would imagine they're that bit higher as well. So
The only thing I'd say is,
like, Mayo play Saturday night home games.
Yeah, they're playing Dublin this Saturday night as well. But the only thing I'll say is, for the hardcore support, let's say if there's a long journey, you know, and they want to bring their families along, you know, they're talking about if they have to drive maybe 3 hours and then the game doesn't end till 9 o'clock and then they're not getting back till all hours of the night. So there would be people who would complain about that side.
That for away games, but your home games, you're grand.
Absolutely.
The opposition have to do that.
Yeah, from a spectator point of view, I'm definitely in Jersey boat as well. There's just something about the game under lights as well. Just adds that little bit extra, a little bit extra atmosphere, possibly because people have been in, you know, having their couple of pints beforehand or looking forward to it afterwards.
Me too. And I am going to Laois Armagh in Moore Park, and I'm not watching Mayo Dublin. And I will have a few pints afterwards. The number of subs, I missed this as well, lads. The number of subs now is down from 6 to 5. And it's no surprise to see Peter Keane and Desi Farrell are not happy about this because they have the biggest squads, they have the biggest picks. I would say some of the weaker counties are delighted with this. Some of the weaker counties would like it down to 3, I'd imagine, where they bring on their 3 best subs and they're not going, you know, Dublin don't have to bring on, Dublin could bring on 10 fellas good enough. Desi wants rolling subs. This is how much of a panel he wants, which is probably a little bit interesting enough. Peter Keane said, when you talk about 5 subs, we had 2 gone in the first half. If you have a guy in your mind who will only last 50 minutes going into a game, you've already 2 already, and then there's another 2 gone after 50 minutes, that's 4 gone, and you still have 20 minutes and another 6 minutes injury time and the possibility of 1 sub. So I suppose he's using the worst case scenario where you lose 2 injured players in the first half. That's not normal. I think 5 is enough. I think 6 suits the Dublins and the Kerrys and the teams that have the big squads. Desi is talking about there's rolling substitutes, incidentally, in the Auburn Cups in the early season competitions. He made 23 subs in the Auburn Cup. I wouldn't like rolling subs. What do you think, Ger? Like, I mean, it's a basketball thing. How would you even track it on a even from an analysis point of view, it would be literally impossible because you wouldn't know who's coming on where and what's happening. Your head would explode.
I think it would detract from our game, from the spectators' enjoyment of it, but even playing the game as well. If you think you're going to be whipped off now after 2 runs because your GPS says that you're getting a bit fatigued or whatever, I don't think it would be hugely enjoyable as a player. I know the AFL have a system of roll on, roll off subs, but do you want to become more like the AFL?
I've experience of it actually, because in the Masters there was roll on, roll off for obvious reasons. We're all out and you're, you know, rickety, crickety, creaking legs, but Dublin were brilliant at it. Like, Dublin have a really big squad. Val Andrews is their manager, and I'm marking the left half back. And now I might get a couple of balls. I skint them once or twice, right? And I was thinking in my head, I'm getting on top of this lad now. He's now, the next minute, after 20 minutes, there's a fresh lad on me. Now this lad's stuck up right beside me, come out to start the second half, number 7's back. Now I'm fatiguing, and this lad's fresh, and suddenly he's all that, all tired. Like, I like it for Masters when you're tired, you put your hand up and come off. But for inter-county level, they're fit enough. They don't need that. And I do think it would take away from it.
Yeah, but it's part of the appeal as well that, like, players are going to be a little bit fatigued at the end and they're going to make mistakes because of it.
True.
Like, that's why all inter-county teams are striving to be fitter than one another. Like, that they have to demonstrate that advantage on the field, you know, towards the end of games. The only thing I'll say maybe that, like, because it's really is 80 minutes now, a couple of years ago before they sorted out the clock, it would have been over after 71, 72 minutes. But games are, there is 6-7 minutes injury time in the second half. There's maybe 5 minutes in the first half, so you are going to 80 minutes. So I have a little bit of sympathy in terms of this 6 sub there. But Desi Farrell is kind of saying that, like, spectators want to see players fresh all the time. But I don't know. Like, I think purely from a spectator's point of view, it really adds to it. The players are getting tired and making mistakes.
Yeah. And how many times in training, Desi or Ger, have you said the manager play a game after a hard training session and you say, now you're tired, we'll see what mistakes you make.
Exactly. You know? And a lot of training is actually geared towards perfecting the basic skills.
While tired,
Again, something we remember doing with Pat Gilroy as well. We did shuttle runs. We played 15 minutes of a game. We did more shuttle runs, 15 minutes of a game. More shuttle runs and 15 minutes of a game. And you weren't allowed to make a mistake in the last part of the game. You had to keep possession. If the 30, 40-yard crossfield kick pass was on in the first third, when you're a bit fresher, give it. In the last third, chances of it going askew is probably that bit higher. So you just keep possession. You give the 10-yard pass or you give
And there's a mental strength about being able to execute skills under pressure, tired. Yeah. That would be, I think you... I don't
rugby,
know.
Is it 5? I know it's a different sport. Is rugby 5 subs? Or I'm trying to think.
Oh, rugby, I think it's 5. Rugby, like, actually goes so much off GPS stats. They get more information. Weren't you saying this? The props are usually withdrawn after 50 minutes because the computer's telling them.
Yeah.
that their power output is decreasing.
Exactly, yeah. And that does happen. And when you watch the rugby guys and the management in the stands, and they have a couple of laptops open in front of them, that's a lot of the stuff is what they're looking at there, and then they do make those calls. But in the AFL though, they've a couple of research pieces I've read, they actually, all the AFL teams use the GPS data along with heart rate data to determine when to take a guy off, very, very similar to what they do in professional rugby. But again, that's a professional sport, it's at a different level, it's evolved, it's a different part of the world. I wouldn't like to see us go that far. I think the mistakes, as you've mentioned, the bit of excitement, what's going to happen now, the last 10 minutes of a game, Dublin and Kerry are evenly matched, Cunningham talking on the review show.
Yeah,
we've met 5-6 times, is it, in the last couple of years.
Yeah.
We've won twice each, drawn once. Cunningham, if he was here, he would tell us.
Kerry won the league, Dublin. I think, it's very close anyways. There's 2 wins, 2 draws each or something like that.
Yeah, and then you look at some of Dublin's All-Ireland wins and semi-final draws against Mayo over the last 7 or 8 years, only a point or so in between it. And the amount of errors in the last couple of minutes is what's determined who the victor was, and the mental strength that comes into.
Yeah,
so you would kind of you would lose that.
Yeah, with a bit of excitement of it, yeah.
For the last minute, you might have... Maybe your three lead, you'd have for Dublin, for example, you'd have Fenton, you'd have Kilkenny, you'd have James McCarthy, and you could have everybody else be fresh.
Yeah.
You
know?
Those three after getting a break at some point during the game. I wouldn't like it.
But part of the brilliance of Dublin when they got the draw against Kerry last year was that they were down a man. It was going into maybe 80 minutes, whatever, and you had fellas hunting in packs all over the pitch. That was just a testament to their ability to be able to do that despite going through, 75 minutes of hard work, up to that. So you don't want it to be a case where somebody can just introduce, 50 minutes ago, somebody can introduce 5 subs, whatever, and they'll finish out the game as fresh as they were starting the first 20 minutes.
Yeah,
that's what I'd say. I'm not sure is that what Desi Farrell is referring to, but
here's one, right? That mental strength that we've seen from Dublin in that particular case you gave there, Connor. If we've unlimited subs, if the GPS on you know you're half effect. I'm not going to chase this one. I'm absolutely dying my feet. The lads will see on the computer screen they're going to be whipped off now anyway. I'll
leave that be. Yeah,
take me off. Yeah. Although, just
imagine putting your hand off to come off in a championship game. Even in the Masters, I get tick when they bring me off, give me 5 minute rest. Yeah. For God's sake!
Is it 08 or 09? Peter Cannon's last game. Mickey Hart played it perfectly. He played him for the 20 minutes, I think, and took him off for the middle part of the.
No, that was 05.
So five. That long.
Cannon wasn't around in 08 for the All Ireland.
Yeah. So it was 05 his last one. Well,
pulls down the gooch then with his last act, pretty much.
Yeah. The cynicism of the forward.
That was it. Keen, you mentioned GPS stats. Keen Mackey's been talking about GPS stats, and he's not a fan. Obviously, his body type would it's not a surprise. He's a class player that wouldn't trade on athleticism, for example. He says, I think a big problem in the GAA is they go by the GPS stats. Player X is just after running 10K. You could be doing 10K running around and doing nothing. GPS is a small key, but you have management teams looking into that and thinking it's the gospel. I found there's too much training and too much conditioning. You have to be fit, but you can go overboard. If you don't give the ball away, you'll be fine. And that's a big one. So if you don't have the basic skills and you're giving the ball away, you're going to run more. And you're going to tackle more and your GPS stats are going to be higher. If you concentrate on the basic, on the skills and not giving the ball away and looking up and all those things, you won't need to be as fit as the other team. You know? And I think the balance away from that might be gone too far. I do agree with him and I am from a different era. But I do agree that, number one, any manager that just goes by GPS stats alone is an idiot. Mm-hmm. Because I could manipulate GPS stats. No problem.
Yeah.
Just chasing around like a headless chicken.
Yeah.
It's not. And the stats on giving the ball away. Where was the ball given away? Was it a safe hand pass? Was it a kick pass? Is the centre forward, who's a playmaker, looking for, really good balls? Did he give it away twice? That's different than some other fella in the midfield giving away 2 easy balls. Do you get me? The stats are only there to help what your football brain tells you, right? And exactly. GPS stats as well.
They should support it, and probably sometimes some of these new gizmos, the S&C guys, with maybe who haven't probably played the Gaelic games or whatever sport are involved in at a high level, they don't get the intricacies of what's going on the field and the context whereby the GPS technology is being used. That has to be explained to player or extra player why the reason we're putting this on you for a league game or a championship game is to try to build a profile on the games that you are playing well in. You might be covering 10 kilometres, but 2.5 kilometres of the 10 were at high intensity. what's high intensity? It's probably anything over 25 kilometres an hour. Jack McCaffrey, to put into context for people, can probably run about
70.
70. So the context of it is key. Poorer managers who are making decisions based off GPS won't get very far. They look the part, but they won't get very far. If, for argument's sake, we're into the 60, last 10 minutes of a game, Connor has the ball. He's actually given the ball away twice, uncharacteristically. I might say...
That's when you look.
Bully, how far has your man ran here? He's actually doing 13. Jeannie Mackerel, based on his usual data, he normally does 10. Okay, maybe we make a call here.
Yeah,
That's very interesting. And yeah, like giving the player the explanation, yeah, what we're looking for here. Don't go out there trying to be crazy and try to impress us. Play your game so we can build a profile, so then we can make call, not yeah, make calls based off that, but refer to it.
Yeah.
When I think, that's the whole thing. Like, you make the decision and then you go, is this backing that decision up? Mm-hmm. If it is, he comes off. If it's not, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's different.
The competition you're playing against is also key. If you're playing against a weaker team and you're winning by 10 points, well then your GPS, throw the GPS off because the stats will be just skewed.
Of course, yeah.
Because
yeah,
it's been too easy, like, you know.
You'd like to think the stats have become more sophisticated, or the intercounty teams that are using them. Like going back even a couple of years when everybody absolutely raving about Kieran Kilkenny when he had X amount of possessions. But then when you analyse that game and you analyse the way he used the possessions, it wasn't all that impressive. Whereas you go back to the All-Ireland final replay last year, I don't have Kieran Kilkenny's stats to hand, but I'd be safe enough in saying that he probably lost a few balls, but his performance was far better.
You
prefer that Kieran Kilkenny ahead of the Kieran Kilkenny who's going to be hand passing it, you know, horizontally, just like left, right, and left.
Well,
right,
that's it. Like, I mean, we all know half forwards are based off possessions a lot, but he'd 55 against Donegal that time, based off the fact Donegal were playing defensively,
exactly,
and all he was doing was taking 1-2s. Whereas against Kerry in the replay, he got 4 points from play. I'd say his possessions might be about 20.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So which is better, 55 possessions or 20? Yeah, you know what I mean? Yeah. What are you doing with the ball? You're right. Colin Boyle is always one that jumps to my mind. He's playing really well. He's taken off after 55. Is Rochford used to kind of take him off, wasn't it? Is he slowing down there? Where's that information coming from? Because we were up in arms a good few times the way he was being taken off.
You know, I was looking back at that today when you mentioned it. There was a couple of articles about you giving out about it at the time. And then he was there. I think it was 4 out of 5 games coming down the home stretch in the 2017 All-Ireland season that he was taken off after. He was taken off. Colin Boyle scored a goal against Kerry in the All-Ireland semi-final. He was taken off after 43 minutes that day. And then I think against Roscommon in the first game, actually the second game, which I think was won with 50 minutes, Dublin in the final, 55. That might have been influenced by Donny Vaughan getting sent off. But at the time, it was definitely a case. I know Stephen Rochford explained it. It's like, this isn't the case of this being a predetermined substitution, which everybody thought at the time. They thought Stephen Rochford has a list. He goes before the game, Colin Boyle is coming off after 50 minutes, Andy Moran is coming off after 50 minutes. Now, whether he was aware of this, but in the semi-final replay, Colin Boyle nor Andy Moran, Colin Boyle lasted 70, Andy Moran lasted the whole game. So I'd like to think in Rochford's defence that he had, you know, a more sophisticated breakdown of stats. It was like, genuinely, Colin Boyle was on Stephen O'Brien against Kerry that day. Stephen O'Brien is running hard all the time. Colin Boyle is not going to be able to keep up with him. We have Paddy Durkin in reserve, but like, you know, in fairness. I think it was a bit more sophisticated than that. But Colin Boyle was, I think it was 6 out of 7. And like, I can remember those games. There was palpable disgust amongst the Mayo supporter when he's being taken off, because Colin Boyle is a warrior, is a leader, who's having an unbelievable season. You're like, why are you taking off him now, come down the home stretch?
Yeah.
But I think, in fairness to Rashford, he had a decent explanation for that time.
See, I'm 41, I'm blaming the GPS for that. I'm like an old man giving out about all this technology. It's a joke. Right, we'll come back with Paddy Cunningham.
I work as a policeman at Garda Síochána down in Store Street, and I'm coming back out and there's a cohort of loyal Tyrone fans still up in the stand as you come back out, and they're roaring at me, "Hey, Coffrey, you free state bastard." and next thing I hear, "You have no fucking jurisdiction up here."
So Paddy Cunningham turns 35 this year, and he hasn't played for Antrim for 6 years, but made his league comeback against Wexford last weekend. Paddy, are you mad or what?
Some people are telling me I am. Listen, I suppose I took a sort of 6-year break there. I didn't really intend for it to be as long as that, but unfortunately it ended up being a 6-year break of that. But I suppose in reflection, I probably should have took a break sooner than I did, and I would have been back quicker. But and to be honest, I probably thought at this stage my county career was over, until Lenny basically got in touch and had a couple of meetings with him, and he managed to persuade me back into the fold. But listen, I'm delighted to be back and really enjoying it again.
So how does a 1-year break turn into a 6-year break? Do you stop getting that phone call after a year or two? Do managers just write you off thinking that you've no interest?
Let me fire the phone, man. Obviously, initially when I took a break, yeah. I just had a second child, and to be honest, at that stage, I was completely fed up with it. Being truthful with you, mentally, I wasn't enjoying it anymore. It was becoming more a chore. I know that's a terrible thing to say when you're lucky enough to be able to play county football or hurling, but I played. I was on the senior hurling panel when I was still minor at 17, and played 2 years at it. I was playing university football and hurling, county under 21 football and hurling, and then I got into the senior football squad, and I was just relentless for year upon year, and I just ended up falling in love with the game, really. And it wasn't even just county. I enjoyed going back to the club, but again, my performances probably weren't as what they should have been, and I got into sort of the comfort zone of just enjoying club football, and it was a lot more relaxed, and there wasn't obviously the same level of commitment required, and I suppose it's changed now. I suppose the club level it's nearly similar, but I just mentally I was exhausted from the whole 10, 11 years I'd done on the trot. I wish I had took a break and I was maybe 24, 25, which I've seen a lot of lads doing now, and got that hunger and desire back, because I definitely have it now. It was just a pity I waited until I was 34, coming to 35, as you say, to go back at it.
Ah, yeah. Well, you're a finisher, so you don't have to be known for your tracking back or anything like that. You're an accurate scorer, so there's another year or two left in you, right?
I don't know about a year or two. Now the wife might have something to say about that.
How did you feel against Wexford?
To be honest, initially it was a big shock to the system going back to that level of training. So I picked up a couple of strains, a couple of knocks, and I was really looking forward to the kind of cup, and I tweaked the hamstring just that week before. So I was nervous getting into Wexford, but I felt good considering I hadn't played any competitive. I played 3 or 4 friendlies pre-Christmas, but I hadn't played any competitive football since December, so I was just delighted to get 50, 55 minutes or whatever it was over me, you know, that way. So still plenty of work to do, and you know, hopefully I'll become sharper over the next few weeks. But I felt good, thankfully.
Yeah, no, that's good. And come here, how did Lenny sell it to you then? Because this is obviously his third year, and has he been on to you before this year, or was it this year kind of out of the blue?
I actually ran into him coincidentally at one of the club championship games earlier in the year, which I was spectating at. It was actually with Declan Lynch, who's obviously Antrim captain this year, a big good friend of mine. So he had a couple of sort of allies, himself and Conor Murray, sort of at me during the year, but did not come back. And to be honest, I never really took it seriously until Lenny approached me and asked for a cup of coffee. And I said, listen, Lenny, I don't know if it'll be worth your while. I would need to think about it and see how the club season goes first. And take it from there. So I met him 2 or 3 times and sort of listened to what he had to say, and to be fair, I was impressed, you know. And there's a good bunch of lads there, and they're probably maybe just lacking that wee bit of experience. So Lenny probably took a different approach this year in terms of trying to get Tomás McCann back as well, who would have been of my generation. So thankfully the two of us are back, and you know, there's a good mix there of youth and experience, and hopefully, you know, we might be able to push on a little bit more on what they have done the last couple of years this year.
Right, because I was thinking Lenny might have seen your club form this year. We all saw how well your club went in all the semi-finals, and probably should have won the final and that all the replays. And you know, you're scoring in that. I thought maybe he asked you that after that, but he had asked you before the club season.
Yeah, well, he'd asked me just. I think we had maybe played one club game at that stage. I think we had scored a few that game that we had played, but I suppose that was probably the catalyst for it. And then obviously the club did have a decent enough year. It was disappointing obviously not to win the championship after such an endurance test, so to speak, with so many replays. But I suppose the club season sort of was more convincing for me to maybe think about going back, because I knew if the club season didn't go well this year, I would never even contemplate going back. But I still had a hell of a lot of work to do, obviously. It wintered well, for want of a better term, so I had a lot of work to do myself, gym work and diet and nutrition and obviously health ways to get everything in line and sync to try and offer something. So I think that to be honest, was perhaps maybe looking me more back as an impact player, maybe for 10 or 15 minutes, but just to be more around the change room. And I sort of said to him, listen, if I'm going back, I want to play. And he says, well, listen, if you're showing me that you're capable of playing for longer than that, you'll be playing. So I was lucky enough to get a starting jersey on Sunday, and I'm very keen to hold on to it.
Yeah, definitely. So was it much of a culture shock landing back in with what's required at inter-county level at this stage? It's 2011 since I was involved in a panel. I can only imagine what it's like in there now in 2020.
As you say, it's definitely continuing to get more professional in terms of the setup, in terms of the science behind it and GPS systems, and you know, it's well documented now the stuff that's going into the setup, and even in terms of the backroom team, it's definitely a snowball from I was last involved, and it is very impressive. It's continuing to get more and more of those small margins, and the amount of time, effort and resources put into it, I've definitely seen a huge change in that from when I was last involved, and that was only 6 years. So it's definitely continuing to get more professional, and every single team is looking that extra edge, and the money and resources and everything that's going into that is unbelievable at this stage.
Yeah, well, I suppose, and that's it, and I suppose the professional setups are really tested during the league when you've 7 games in 9 weeks, and the big thing with GEA players is that time for recovery isn't there as easily, you know, as professional sports.
Yeah, absolutely, and I suppose that's one thing that Lanny and this backroom team have been good with, probably the older lads, myself included, you know, looking at our GPS and looking at our energy levels, and obviously you're logging every day how you're feeling and how your nutrition and sleep and everything else is, and they're looking at that, and then they're tailing the training towards that. So it's long gone in the days where 30 lads are doing the exact same training, the same volumes and the same amount of sessions and stuff like that. So it's definitely changed tactically from a training point of view, that managers and coaches are trying to be smarter to try and get the most out of their players when it comes to game day. And thankfully that has happened, because I think there was a one-fit approach there for a long time, and thankfully now that dynamic's changed, and there's a lot more expertise and knowledge about the place that as you say, recovery's key whenever you have so many games coming thick and fast.
Yeah, so like I presume during the week now between the Wexford game and another really tough one away at the Sligo, you're doing very little kind of physical training. You're just, you know, playing a bit of football, which maybe is more enjoyable.
Yeah, absolutely. So we trained last night. It was just more a recovery session and a wee small bit of tactical football work, but I suppose it's just gearing up now for Sligo. It'll be a serious tough test, and I feel a huge step up even from last weekend's game for all of us. So they had a comprehensive win over London, so it's a big challenge going to Markovitch Park at any stage. So I'm sure they're going in with a lot of confidence, having got a such convincing win over London. So we'll be up against it, but we're looking forward to it, and hopefully we can build upon our performance against Wexford and try and gain 2 points on Sunday, because it's a big game for both teams.
Yeah, so like, I mean, it's been well documented that you suffer from Crohn's disease, and that was diagnosed in 2011. How are you with it now, Paddy? Have you got a handle on it? How's life living with that?
Yeah, I'm very lucky. I've got an excellent consultant, Dr. Mitchell, there. He's been incredible for me. I suppose the big thing is that the medications work for a certain length of time, so probably over the course of the last 10 years, I've been on varied medication, and obviously there's different side effects along with that, but the one I'm currently on is like an infusion type drug, which I get every 8 weeks, and it's been very good for me. It stabilised things well and allows me to train and live as best a normal life as I possibly can. It's just obviously monitoring myself, and symptoms would flare up from time to time, but I think a lot of that's got me through it to date is being positive about things and training and looking after my dad, and trying to be as positive as possible. I've had one surgery in 10 years, and they say after 3 years you're 70% chance of having another one. So I suppose I'm 10, 11 years post-surgery now, so I've been very, very lucky, and I'm blessed for that I haven't had to go on the knife again. So.
Right, okay. And I suppose obviously the healthy lifestyle with the GEA and watching what you eat and, you know, being regimented with your diet, they kind of work hand in hand, I suppose.
Yeah, absolutely. And I suppose the thing with Crohn's disease, if you look at it in detail, every case is different. People react to certain food groups in different ways. Some people can't eat certain things, other people can't. Each case is very much different in terms of the diet and that type of things. But Dr. Mitchell is a real advocate for exercise, and he says there's myself and another triathlon athlete who has Crohn's, and he says that we're really defeating basically the logic due to the fact probably that we are so physically active and we've had a long sustained exercise history. So it's definitely something that I believe has helped me over the course of the last decade, is continuing to play and exercising and looking after the body as best I can.
Right, okay. You mentioned you get a transfusion every 8 weeks, and I was reading a piece in the 42 that you did, and you said the best way to describe it is probably like batteries. You're full of energy for 4 or 5 weeks, but you do feel yourself lacking a bit of energy for the 2 weeks or the 10 days leading up to the next transfusion. I'm just wondering, like, if that 2 weeks lands before an important game, how do you deal with that?
To be honest, Colin, there's not much you can do. You just have to grim and bear it, because obviously medicine's medicine, and yeah, you have to abide by the rules, basically the medication dosages from the hospital and the consultant. So it's just probably resting up as much as possible, not doing any real training and just trying to get through the games. I know my club management team have been very, very supportive and helpful with that over the last few years. Basically it's setting a diary every 8 weeks. I know when I'm going, I know when I'm getting it. So you do feel lethargic and tired and fatigued in the running to getting it, but once you get it within a couple of days, you do feel a lot more energetic. So it's just managing that and sleeping more and resting more, and not trying to put the body under too much pressure, because that's whenever you try to fight through it, that's when the symptoms would come back to bite you a wee bit, to be honest.
Right, okay. And were you very proactive when the symptoms started before 2011 to get it, you know, diagnosed, or did you let it drag on and kind of grin and bear it? You know what Irish men are like?
Well, probably it was probably underlying, you know. It took me a while to probably, as you say, Irish men sometimes try and pretend things aren't wrong when they are wrong, but it ended up going private. They couldn't initially find out, done a lot of tests, and ended up going private and was diagnosed then with Crohn's. Big shock. Inevitably then, when it really got bad, I got a kick in the stomach accidentally in a game and was in severe pain, and was rushed into the hospital, and they put a camera in and they found sort of 8 inches of poison, and I had to get immediate surgery to get that cut out. And that was really whenever it was at a safe moment where I knew obviously it was extreme and I was going to have it obviously for the rest of my days.
Right, okay, geez, that's terrible. And I know you tried to stay positive and stuff, but I'm sure there was a time after you're diagnosed where it's very hard to be positive.
Yeah, there is, but you know yourself, sports people are generally have a strong and positivity sense within themselves, and the way I looked at it was I could either retire and give up the ghost at that stage and you know, try and live just a sedentary lifestyle or a basic lifestyle and try and get by with, or I could try and fight it. Thankfully, 90% of the time, that's how I felt about it. Tried to be as positive as possible and get as much out of myself as possible. I was blessed that I was given a bit of talent in relation to sport. And, you know, I think there's two ways you can take it. You can moan and groan about it, or you can try and be as positive and try and lead a normal life as possible. And thankfully, I've been able to do that, and I've been very blessed.
Yeah, exactly. Just last one on this, and I saw this in the same interview. The medication has made you lose your hair.
Yeah, well, so is, the drugs have different side effects for different people, and unfortunately, that was one of the main ones I have. It's a very, very high, it's a very strong, potent drug that I'm on, and that was just basically one of the side effects that was outlined, and it was unfortunate. It doesn't affect every case of the people here on it.
Right.
But I was one of them. But I was just challenging itself, I suppose, being totally honest with you. I actually found that harder to deal with than probably the Crohn's, given the fact that everybody sees that, whereas people don't really know that you have Crohn's until I actually went public with it. So
yeah,
it was a challenge in itself. It was something I probably struggled with for a while, but I'm well over it at this stage. At the end of the day, it's kept me from going under the knife and I'm having to get any more surgeries or nothing removed. And by and large, I've been able to continue playing. So if that's the only sacrifice or only loss I've had, I'm willing to deal with it now at this stage.
Yeah, yeah, it's a sacrifice. You mentioned Thomas McCann is back, but I don't know what it is about Antrim football is trying to keep everybody together, because I remember back in 09 you were really strong, and like teams break up easy in Antrim, and I see you're missing Matthew Fitzpatrick and Ryan Murray this year, so it's like two in and two out. I see Peter Healy is back as well. There seems to be a bit of a revolving door in Antrim football.
I know, but I suppose if you look at every county now, you can nearly argue that's the case.
Yeah.
So I think within every county within Ireland, there's somebody's out and somebody's in. I think that's just the nature of county football now, given the extremity of the commitment required. And, you know, I think boys are starting to realise there's more to life. If they're young, free and single, they're travelling, they're going away for work. They're trying to gain more life experience rather than bogged down in football or hurling their whole lives. So, you know, I think, you know, from an Antrim point of view, obviously, I was really keen and looking forward to going back with Ryan and Matthew Fitzpatrick. So they're two incredible footballers, and it's something that Antrim aren't blessed with in terms of forward options as well, especially with Tomás and myself going back. It would have been great to have those two boys there. But listen, I suppose Lenny has got the hand he's dealt with. Every county manager's the same, you know. Yeah, every day in the media, it's well documented now. The boys have stepped aside for one reason or another. So it's just something that, unfortunately, managers now have to deal with. And there's no real consistent approach or consistency. Even you look at Dublin, Jack McCaffrey, winning All-Irelands, winning All-Stars, Player of the Year, steps away to travel for a year in the midst of winning All-Irelands. So I think that's just the nature of the way the game's gone now. But hopefully, you know, it's a strong enough panel, maybe stronger than we had last year. And we'll see where it takes us over the coming weeks.
Yeah, exactly. Well, that's it. When I was playing, I used to play for a year and take a year off. 1 year was enough for me. So, like, I mean, I don't know how they're doing. I don't. Maybe you might need a 12-year break after this year with the commitment that's required.
I would say this year will do me now at this level.
Right, well, come here. Best of luck against Sligo. You're away in Markovic Park this weekend. So best of luck in that. And thanks very much for taking the call, Paddy.
Brilliant call. No worries. Good to speak to you.
Conan Doherty was a fantastic analyst, and I mean, I really heed what he would say in your programme.
I think Tyrone are going to win. I'm going to go with them. As much as I predicted Dublin to win the All-Ireland at the start of the year, I just think Tyrone are going too well. They're unaffected by the other team. Too well set up. I think they've been preparing for Dublin for 2 years. They're ready for them. I'm going to go with them, yeah.
All right, so predictions, lads. So in Division 1, see, I think Kerry Galway is the big game in this division, but look, I'm kind of going to be overruled on this one, and I know you're going to say Mayo Dublin is in McHale Park. And 2 years ago, it was Mayo Dublin. I'm not sure Mayo Dublin is the big game now, but we'll talk about it anyways. And the fact that Connor... Was there wild celebrations in Mayo that Jim Gavin retired? Because it was 15 league and championship matches against Jim Gavin, and Mayo didn't beat them once.
Yeah, for a little while. And then you saw them against Kerry last week, and you're like, Jesus, nothing has changed whatsoever. And even looking ahead to this weekend, like, what's become most annoying about Mayo Dublin in the last few years, particularly the league, is how routine Dublin beating Mayo is. I mean, like, I know we've given them, not last year because they hammered us in the second half, but up until then, you know, like, it was always neck and neck. But like in the league, like, Dublin have had their way with Mayo for the last few years. Absolutely hammered us in Dublin in Croke Park last year. The year before, I think Dublin won by maybe 3 points, but it was a 3-point hammering. And there's been a few of those in the last couple of years. So like, and even just going ahead into this weekend, looking how kind of you know, ready Dublin looked for the Kerry game compared to Mayo, who were absolutely blessed to get out of Ballybuffet with a point and had to really bring on Aidan O'Shea, was just back from holidays, a couple of lads who I don't think James Horan would have planned on introducing, only he had to. So going ahead into this weekend, I'm a bit fearful for, because I think Dublin, they've always kind of, because of the rivalry there, I know it's Kerry now, their main rivalry, Mayo, for a long time, but Dublin have always looked to make a statement against Mayo because of that rivalry. Yeah. And I think they'll be looking to do Desi Farrell's first game in charge against Mayo. I fear for kind of what might happen to us on Saturday night.
The new faces, there's Padraig O'Hara, who looked like he's a tasty enough
player
based off the highlights. You mentioned him, not sure about the ponytail, but we let him away. It got roughed up in the second half. Someone pulled it off him. That'd be a right trick to do with a fella who prides himself on his hair. Just pull that ponytail off him. Oisín Mullen, Jordan Flynn, Brian Walsh, Ryan O'Donoghue, and Tommy Conroy. Tommy Conroy scored a lovely point off Neil McGee.
Right bit of stuff, Tommy
What's
Conroy.
What's going on? Is he a right bit of stuff?
He is. No, in fairness, like, Tommy Conroy would have been talked about for a long long time. And then,
what age is he?
He's out under 20. I don't think, was he under 20 last year? Himself and Oisín Mullen were brought in last year.
Oisín Mullen's still under 20.
Yeah, so they're brought into the camp to kind of give them a flavour of what it's like towards the end of the summer, with the idea then that they'd be kind of fast-tracked in the summer. So Tommy Conroy, I think, is 20 or 21, but he has been known about in Mayo circles for a long time. Last year, we talked about the Neil. I'm not going to try and pronounce Uchtarach because I know you got grief about
the
pronunciation.
Yeah, they're lynching me over this.
So he was, I think
you told me that pronunciation. I'm getting lynched.
Variation of it, because I was thinking I was half responsible for that, but we won't go there. But yeah, Tommy Conroy was the star of the Neil's kind of, they won the intermediate in Mayo. They only come from junior, so it was a big deal for the Neil to win that. So as well as that, he's been known about in underage circles, really pacey. I would say he needs to bulk up a little bit, but then you're looking at him getting a point off somebody like Neil McGee, like with his first involvement. And then not only that, he got proper involved as well, won a couple of balls around the halfway line too. So I think with Oisín Mullen, I would say the same for Oisín Mullen, that I think that people need to be patient with these lads. I think that the jury will be out on them for a little while yet, but like that, geez, if Tommy Conroy has a few more cameos like he did against Donegal, like maybe that will be fast tracking him to the senior team sooner rather than later.
And what about is it Brian Walsh as a midfielder, is it Flynn,
so Brian Walsh is Ballintubber have been the best team in Mayo the last couple of years. So a kind of a working wing forward that can take a score. Took a lovely score actually against Donegal. Jordan Flynn started against midfield. Mayo were absolutely dominated in the midfield the first half in Ballybuffet. Right. Tom Parsons has taken off at half time. In fairness to Tom Parsons, it's his first proper game back. He played the FPD against Galway, so
was he wearing GPS?
He possibly was. We'll go easy on Tom for that.
And but Clark didn't help him
either.
It was Clark's kickouts
and the fact that they were being dominated too. So Aidan O'Shea came in, Jeremy O'Connor went back to midfield. Jordan Flynn played wing forward as a kind of working wing forward. He was involved in a lot of scores. So I would imagine that, I think it'll be Aidan O'Shea and Jeremy O'Connor again on Saturday night, whether they're named to start there. And Jordan Flynn could do a job wing forward as well. But Mayo don't necessarily need hard working wing forwards, they need scoring wing forwards.
They need scoring forwards.
James Durkin got 1-1. 1-3.
But James Durkin,
he's not new, he's been around a while.
He got a goal against Tipperary in 2017. Goal, yeah. He's Paddy's twin brother as well. So I didn't think James Durkin had that in him. He's not a prolific scorer at club level. Neil Douglas, his clubmate, would be more known for scoring, and he's been given a chance for Mayo a couple of years. But fairness to James Durkin, the way he took it, that step, to get inside two lads, took the freeze off Jeremy O'Connor, who kicked two from the ground. I didn't think Jeremy O'Connor had in him, right. And then it was
how could you with the brother dominating?
That's exactly it. And it was brilliant. Then at the end, I can't think who was in James Durkin's face. James Durkin gave away a free to allow Donegal to get 3 points up, and whoever he gave the free away to was in his face, roaring at him. The same fella tried to tackle him just before James Durkin got the goal, and James Durkin got the goal on him. And I don't think he went back at him either, but it was just as well as getting the equaliser, it was a nice touch to see.
James Horan said, if you have the likes of young guys who did well against Donegal, you'd be mad not to play them the next day. It's an interesting dynamic that goes on, and it's a great position to be in. Horan was saying, geez, I don't know, Ger. You don't see Desi Farrell experimenting with a whole new... He picked 9 of last year's All-Ireland team. He picked the strongest team that he possibly could have, based on who was available to him.
I suppose in James Horan's case, where he's coming from, they still haven't won in All-Ireland. So the fellas that have been trialled and tested, unfortunately, have just fallen short. Very close over the years, but short nonetheless. So it's probably more... What would you call it? He's in the development phase. I think the challenge with a lot of those younger guys who you've gone through there, who did perform particularly well, I only got to see snippets of the highlights in RTE, but those guys will be marked in terms of Dublin's planning going into the game this week. And probably outside the David Clifford, who's obviously unbelievable, the challenge to up-and-coming young players is when you do come in and you're getting a point off the likes of Neil McGee, when Neil McGee's marking the next day, they won't be getting as easy. So that's the challenge.
I'd say Neil McGee was looking at, who's this whippersnapper?
But that does happen because you're an established fella, and Neil McGee, the same age as Neil, and it's great that he's still going.
But what I really appreciate about Tommy Conroy, you've got Neil McGee, I think he's a 4-time All-Star now, at least 3. To say in your head, here, I'll take this lad on. I like that in him. Because a lot of people go, whoa, Neil McGee, I won't go past him. He's too big and strong. He backed himself to take on an established All-Ireland winner.
And you do have to challenge the defender in that case. And where Donegal, they are still defensive, not so much as they were under Gallagher. And McGuinness before that, but they are still quite defensive. So sometimes you just have to have a go at these fellas,
yeah,
and see how good they are at actually defending one on one. And you guys creating an awful lot of chances going into the game.
There was a very strong breeze in Ballyfae as well. And I'd say Tommy Conroy kicked that from, it was a good 30, 35 yards, you know. And but just what you said, and actually, funnily enough, afterwards, he didn't quite go into Niamh McGee. He gave him this
but he blocked him on the,
yeah,
the kick
this
out.
Kind of slightest,
yeah,
kind of nudge. Yeah, 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 just, yeah, letting him know he was there, basically. But
even more confidence.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. The only thing I'll say is that, like, hopefully it won't happen again this weekend, but Mayo have had some really bruising encounters against Dublin in terms of, like, nearly humiliating encounters in Dublin in the league, and you'd wonder, like, about the mental strength of some new guys who are thrown in there, and then they might end up just being on the end of a hiding, and how that's going to affect their development. I'm sure James Horan is aware of that too. If he plays too many, like, the only thing I'll say about that is that he doesn't have many other options. Like, Keith Higgins came on the last tip, was just back training. Chris Byard, Jamie O'Shea aren't ready yet. Aidan O'Shea, as I said, I don't think it might have been his plan to throw him because he's just in.
It's a testament, so he has to how well he looks after himself.
Oh yeah, big time.
I would follow him on Instagram. He's been away in Vietnam and all
for
places
for a long time,
like, for,
yeah,
a good,
yeah,
while,
yeah,
like, I mean,
yeah,
to come back, yeah, not
I made,
long and
I
be,
made a huge difference, made a huge difference.
It's the same thing as well with, always makes a big difference, and yeah, gives them that base in midfield. And then you have Dublin lads coming back from a team holiday where, like you mentioned, coming back a stone overweight. This is
doesn't
a new breed
anymore.
This is a new breed, Ger, like, this is incredible stuff.
And that's the point we're making at the start of the show, is that off-season is so different now to how it was 5, 6, 7 years ago, that guys are doing something. They're not going hard out, but they're definitely doing something. They're minding the diet, they're having a few points, but
yeah,
they might skip a meal the next day to watch the calorie count, and this, yeah, is what guys are doing.
And they might do a 10k run once a week,
exactly,
and they're ticking over, and
exactly,
they're never,
yeah,
losing it, like, they're,
yeah,
never,
yeah,
losing it. It's,
yeah,
it's incredible stuff. The other big one in, who do we fancy? We fancy Dublin, lads, let's be honest. Like,
yeah,
you'd be doing well to see that Mayo team putting it up to that Dublin team the way they performed. Like,
and let's just put more sand on the pitch.
The
amount of sand burns used to have playing down in Castle Bar, beautiful to stand, the stadium and everything else, but the pitch,
that's the rain,
you see
that's the rain on the west.
I remember I was at the game the last time Mayo played Dublin. I've never been as cold. McHale Park, I'll say this to anyone, is the coldest stadium,
yeah,
in the country as it is. And then the last time we played Dublin, it absolutely rained down from the heavens. So, like, we needed it, because McHale Park, the surface of McHale Park is grand during the summer. Like, I've played a lot of club games, like, in the winter, it's not a great surface for the rest of the time, so it's probably needed. Plus, listen, the added bonus that Dublin are coming down, make it tricky for you too. So
I don't, well, you probably do remember a couple of years ago when the fog came in at half time.
That's right. Yeah.
Darren McConnelly had scored, I don't know, about 10 points, maybe not 10 points in the first half. And big fog came in, game was called off.
Yeah.
Pat Gilroy is manager, so we all went on the beer. We had an unbelievable session.
Yeah.
The lads ended up in Westport and Newport and all sorts of places. And we were staying in Brafey House, and the bus leaving at 10 the next morning. I knew everyone made the bus just about, but we went down and played Sunday week or Sunday after that. And his bet is out the gate.
I remember that, yeah,
points,
yeah, that's
we were
right. Yeah,
right.
Going in, but
yeah,
we learned a lot from those.
We had a fog machine at the time.
The fog machine, yeah. The sand wasn't working, so we got the, maybe that's where all the money went from those, those lads over in New York.
I wonder if gave so much money.
Yeah. They couldn't possibly put fog machine on the receipt here.
They went in to Lidl.
But sure,
you go into Lidl to get bananas and a litre of milk, and you come out with a lot more. So
you didn't see fog machine on that receipt, that was the problem.
A load of Jaffa cakes and fog machine.
All right, the other one then. Oh, look, I just want to give this Kerry Galway a mention, because the Galway team is picked. Pádraic Sheoy's really looking after us on this show, lads. I love when a team's picked early. Damien Comer's in the half forward line. That's the big talking point. It's his first start, geez, I think, since 2018. And the other big talking point is Ronan Steed. How many times have we mentioned him in the club? He's starting midfield. Again, everything so far Pádraic Sheoy has been doing, I love the look of Damien Comer in the half forward line. He can be out of the game too much in the full forward line, and he's not an out and out scorer like Shane Walsh. Shane Walsh gets 5 balls, it could be 5 scores. Damien Comer might lay off a few. It's just changed the dynamic of that forward line completely, and I completely like the look of it, and it'd be very interesting to see how Steed gets on at senior inter-county level.
Yeah, I very exciting to see Pádraic Sheoy in there with Galway and John Dively with him. What I really enjoyed about Galway the weekend was they were just more offensive in how they played. They were trying to move the ball forward, guys running off the shoulder, the heads were up, they weren't all dropping behind the ball like they were under Kevin Walsh. I know probably Kevin was probably cutting cloth to measure, but Joyce, he would have a more offensive football philosophy, being a great forward that he was. So I think we're going to see, for me, a high scoring game, I hope so, the weekend down in Kerry. It's a big ask for Galway to win. Joyce still experimenting. Will Steed be able to up the pace? Because he's been great for the club. He's 28 now, I think. there is a notable difference between senior club and senior county, and particularly Division One senior county. The pace is just that bit higher.
Yeah, yeah.
Your recovery is less. The guy you're marking is faster, stronger. Your time in possession is that bit less. So your decision making process have to improve. So
is he long in the tooth to change all that in his head?
See, I don't think we should expect too much of him in his first game. I think it'll be an opportunity for him to experience what it is like playing senior inter-county against a top class team like Kerry. But I think if he can have a kind of a 6 out of 10 game, however long he may be on the field, I think that would be a positive for Steve. But I really enjoyed him as a footballer over the years for Corfin, so hopefully he makes it.
Yeah, exactly. Division 2, I want to say the big game is Laois Armagh. Probably might be the most entertaining game. Laois have a point on the board, Armagh have two, but there's not as much riding on it. Wanted to make a correction about Kieran Lillis. I made a balls of this on Monday, lads. So I went off a few talking points I read on one of the Laois websites, and Lillis didn't play full forward at all. Started in midfield, and I was, because he got 1-1. The 1-1 he got, a mark, he was in the full forward line from a long ball, and the goal he got was at the end from a high ball. But he started in midfield, and I was annoyed with myself that I got something wrong with my own bloody county, because I had been texting one of the lads that morning, and it didn't even dawn on me to say, did Lillis stay in there? I was asking him about the work they did on the marks. But anyways,
did Kieran Lillis himself text you?
He rang me yesterday about another thing. But I'm talking about Lillis playing full forward, and he didn't play there at all. Anyway, it's embarrassing, but that's the way it goes. That's when you're trying to get 16 Gaelic football games and 8 hurling games, and you're trying to stay on top of them in the space of a few hours. Anyways, so that's that. Lillis is in midfield, and Colin Murphy's in the full forward line with Evan O'Carroll.
Well, in your defence, Willie, the Evan O'Carroll goal only surfaced, I think it was yesterday.
Saw it, you see it. What a bullet. Yeah. Jesus, the speed he's able to kick a ball at, isn't it? It's unreal.
And he meant it too. He was going for it.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, there's no doubt about that, because he has goals in him. Kevin Westmead, Clare Kildare. Fermanagh Roscommon, lads, probably has the most riding on it, because this is Roscommon arguably favourites to come out of it. I fancied Kildare and Armagh, but Roscommon are away to Fermanagh in Brewster Park. Fermanagh last year beat Kildare, Clare and drew a Cork there. Fermanagh were favourites to get out of Division 2 last year until the last game. Declan McCusker was interviewed and he said, he's talking about Ricey and the continuity with Ricey being in the backroom team last year. Now he's a manager. He says, I think everyone gets on well with him because of his man management. The boys said we wanted Ricey involved one way or another for the continuity. We had him for the last couple of years, and to just throw it away for an entirely new management team, it makes it difficult to push on when you're starting something new again. And then you're starting to think Fermanagh, they're not in people's conversations to get out of Division 2. They almost got out of it last year. Nothing's changing. They have that continuity. They take the league seriously. Brewster Park is a poxy place to go. And now I'm thinking Roscommon could actually be out of the league after two games.
Mm. Well, I was just about to say,
not to
heap too much pressure on Roscommon, but given the way that if they looked at the league before and they would have thought, right, we've got Laois at home, open up, that's probably 2 points for us. And then they would have maybe had this one as one that they might do, you know, well to get a point out of or get a win out of. And then they're looking after this. So if they were to lose this weekend, they have 1 point, and then they still have Kildare, Armagh. I'm trying to think of the other teams in Division 2 off the top of my head, but a lot of good teams in Division 2 left to play, and they only have a point.
Well, Kildare and Armagh are the two big ones,
exactly,
and I think they have them away from home, so they'll be in big trouble if they lose against Fermanagh.
And if Armagh and Kildare win this weekend, they'll have 4 points on them already, do you know what I mean? So I know I would have fancied Roscommon to get out. They were my favourite to get out of Division, but like if they lose this weekend, I still don't think they're going to get relegated, but I can't see them being promoted, which is a mad thing to say, I suppose, only after two games.
And obviously the two Quigleys aren't there. Sean pulled out in January, and Seamus wasn't there last year. I didn't see anything about him committing this year or not. I don't know. Conal Jones is obviously very important for them, and Ryan in midfield. They still own Donnelly, Aidan Breen, Kieran Corrigan, Che Cullen, Declan McCusker, Richard O'Callaghan, and Ulton Kelm, who is just out of the under-20s, he plays everywhere, but he's a very good player. They're a solid Division 2 team at the moment, Ger, and this is a banana skin for Roscommon. And they went a point ahead of Kildare after 57 minutes in Newbridge, away from home, and Kildare favourites. You know, we know how good Kildare are and have potential to be with the lads they had back. So, like, I mean, I don't know. I'm calling Fermanagh to create an upset here.
No, I think you'd have to go with Fermanagh. There's obviously the feel-good factor with Ricey staying on and being manager, and the performance from the weekend gone, and I think listen to McCusker's comments there, where you've a good man manager who's interested in how the fellas are getting on, probably off the field as well. Guys want to play for him, and it's your first game then in the at home, and you want to make a statement as well. So you'd have to go with Fermanagh on this one.
Yeah, okay. Division 3. It's hard to know what the big one here is, lads. Down in Derry, traditionally, but Down in Derry are nowhere near the traditional forces. When you think of Down in Derry, you think, what a great match that'll be. And then you think, is it any different to Offaly Longford?
Yeah.
If Down in Derry were in Leinster and Dublin were destroying them by 25 points all the time, would you even look at Down in Derry in any way other than also ran?
It's a massive game for Derry after losing last week. And a bit like Roscommon, who probably before the season, I would agree with you, Conor, would have said, right, here's a possible 4 points from the first two games, but all of a sudden they're on 1 point. And they're going into a tough place like Brewster Park. So Derry losing the first game, they're under pressure, I think, going into this one against Down. They're not the team that they were, but again, as Paddy Talty's in the second year then. With,
Paddy Talty, yeah.
So those players will have a better understanding of how he wants them to perform. So it's going to be tough to get a result for Derry in Newry.
Like the 94 Ulster final, I think, was a famous one on GAA Gold, and TG Cahir, Joe Brawley, Anthony Toll, I remember. That was on like last summer or something. It was epic stuff. I'd say this will be very far removed from it.
See, that's in my head. Down Derry's huge. But like, I mean, Jesus, like, you can't keep thinking back to that. But Paddy Talley was interviewed after the Tipperary game, and that game ended up 10-10. And you're always thinking, like, because Down would be a defensive enough team. And he blamed it on Tipperary. He says Tipperary set up very defensively, and they obviously have a new manager this year, so maybe they are, with power in there. He said they sat behind the ball, they're physically very strong, but we were the architects of our own downfall at times. Some of our decision making up front, giving the balls away, turning balls over, it was a tight game and it was very hard on those lads. Down are playing a target man, Owen McCabe, up front, who's meant to have a sensational leap on him. So Paddy Talley is using him in there for marks, obviously. And also, you'd imagine the mark is a good thing when you're playing against a team that's sitting back, because you can pop the odd ball in, maybe long. You know, the screen can't cover everywhere. If you're playing Tipperary, and according to Talley, they're set up defensively, play one big man one side of full forward line, the other, and hit diagonal balls. The zonal men can't, you know, cover both, and you could get handy scores with the other, because the defensive team isn't going to put too much pressure on the man kicking the ball. You'd imagine defensive teams have to push out and pressurise the ball further out the field.
I know you covered it on the league review show on Monday, and we talked about it in the preview, and certainly my sentiment on the advance mark is that it's not going to have an impact on Gaelic football, as some of the old terms are talking about. I know he's talking about Paul Geaney's point, his mark, and
Kilkenny.
They were two great marks because they were being well marked, and there was a bit of tussle. I think Tadhg Morley maybe was on Kilkenny for that one. And it was well worth a mark because it was a great skill to fend off your man and kind of catch the ball. But if your sole tactic, or 50% of your tactic from an attack perspective, is to launch diagonal long ball into the long guy or the big guy with enough fellas around him, you just stand on his toes while he's not jumping. Better defenders will be able to manage it. And for me, Kieran Donoghue was the only one, and again, Tommy Walter said it already before he went to the AFL, when those two fellas were playing, they were catching an awful lot of ball that was being kicked into them, or they were breaking it down to the likes of a Gooch kind of coming around on the loop. So if that's what you're relying on as a down management for your attacking play, I don't think it's going to work.
Yeah. Well, if you make it too obvious,
obvious.
But if you're talking about hitting 3 or 4 a half, and you might get 2 marks in either half out of, there's 4 points. Do you know what I mean? Off that tactic. And then because they're worried about that, they might be covering them too much. Now you have more spare men out around. You know, you could get a few handier marks.
How many marks were, because I know Donegal Boyle and the Independents. Yeah. If I'm allowed to say all of these things.
You can credit other people.
I was just watching all of the games.
But Donegal Boyle from some paper, I'm not really sure what.
But he, in fairness, he referenced his other colleagues, but he was kind of pulling together all the magic points. But I think there was on average 6 marks in Division 1, 6 in Division 2, but there was 4. Leash had 4. And then I think maybe there was 4 and 4 in Division 3 and 4. So on average, in Division 3 and 4, there's less than one mark a game, yeah. Like, you know, which is
it's not much. It's not much. If they actually refined it and brought it inside to 21, no one would care and give out at all.
And that's
would
exciting. Actually, yeah, that's exciting. Yeah. And then you stick your big lad in there, and then there's a bit of jostling. Yeah.
And that might happen twice a half.
Yeah.
And the crowd could go up off their seat, the traditionalists, and no one, not one person would complain about the mark then. They would actually like it.
The only one I can remember in the Mayo Donegal game was that the one that's got
Michael
a lot of
Murphy
attention since the Michael Murphy one.
Yeah.
As in, like, when James Carr got the goal, I think James Carr forgot that he could take a mark because Paddy Durkin took a shot.
When James Dolan missed the point.
He didn't realise that he could But you're right. But he didn't realise that he could take a mark. Do you know, I think for the large part, I nearly got into the habit of forgetting that it actually existed. I wasn't calling it anyway.
I didn't mention it on Monday, but didn't Niall Scully get one in the first half and he bounced it? And a minute he realised, shit, I've lost it now.
And
he gave a pass in. No, he gave a pass in. Yeah. It was just continue play on. You remember that, no?
Yeah, no, you mentioned Turbot on Monday as well. And I remember Mark, he got where he signalled it and then just kept playing on anyway.
Yeah, he did. He wasn't given. Oh, yeah, he continued on. He was.
I think that's
literally though. within about a second.
Oh, if you put your hand up, yeah. But Scully didn't put his hand up now. Okay. Scully just caught it and then bounced it before he he was like, shit. But anyways, go on to Division 4, lads, because probably the big one here is in Wexford Park. It's on Saturday at 2 o'clock. What a weird time to have a game. Not too bad for players, but not good for supporters at all, because we know how many people work on a Saturday. So Wexford home to Carlow. Huge game for Wexford. Huge game for Paul Galvin. They lose this, they're out of the promotion, which is, you know, one of his huge targets going down there. Carlo got off to a winning start. Did Paul Broderick sent off to a straight red card after about 2 minutes? Very out of character for Paul Broderick. He's not that kind of player or that fella. So you always feel bad. And Jerry, you know yourself, you try and provoke a forward and you want him to hit you, or you want him to even drive his elbow back, and the minute that elbow hits you, you're down on the ground, you're rolling around. That's what happened.
Well, I never rolled on the ground. Again, I know you touched on it on Monday, and I bloody hate that going on.
Well, cornerbacks would do that. They would goad you into hitting them and then they will go down.
Well, that's part of it, right? As a forward, you just have to take it and give it back. And Peter Canavan, remember listening to him going back to 2005, he was talking about it recently, but he said if you didn't look after yourself, he said if a back would have gone to walk all over you, so you had to give it back to them. And eventually they probably do stop annoying you, because the back, as I have marking fellas, when they do hit your back, you can appreciate that this fella's tough, and sure, fair enough.
And you're kind of open.
Yeah.
So you're doing it, but an elbow back into your stomach, you're not ready for it, because you could do it at any time.
Yeah. I used to go arm
to the side. Yeah. Well, that's clever, because you're minding yourself. I've told this story so many times over in America. I ended up playing wing back, and Lee O'Brien was on the other team and he was wing forward, and I recognised him. So you know when you're with a team you don't know that well, and you're like with the other wing back, oh, what side do you want? Oh no, you go, you choose. So I went, right, well, I'll choose here, I'll go over and mark that owl lad. So the owl lad turned out to be Gary Mason, who won All-Irelands with Down, and I started trash talking him. Well, he hit me a punch in the stomach, and I was so open for it. I was just there standing behind him trash talking him. Ah, you're finished now. Sure, you're now, lad. Now and all this kind of stuff. Because he was destroying me. I never forget it. And I'll never leave myself open ever after that. That stand to the side, touch tight, but not within striking distance.
Didn't he have 3 points from you in like 20 minutes?
Yeah. I ended up being a sub for, I played with St. Brendan's that year. I was only young. They could only allow 3 outside transfers. I got such a roast on that day. They were like, we need a new marking defender. So I was a sub. But anyways, we'll get back to Carlo here before we finish up. I fancy Carlo probably to win this, even though they are missing Broderick. Brendan Murphy at centre back is an interesting one. He scored a point. I don't think it'll change Brendan Murphy's role all that much, being centre half back. The way the game has gone, centre forwards don't hang around, or you won't have to mark anyone. You pretty much have a free role like he would kind of in midfield, Jared.
Yeah, you're nearly trying to organise your defence around you to make sure you're kind of set up for a ball being lost in your own full forward line. So it's about being a good communicator. But Brendan is obviously a great distributor as well. I've seen that over the years, and that he's, now that he's that bit older, it might suit him as well, that he doesn't probably have to cover as much ground, you know. I'd have to go with Carlo on this one as well. Wexford, tough game up in Antrim. I think they lost by maybe 4 or 5 points last weekend.
Six in the end,
was it? They have a lot of new guys going in there as well, which obviously Paul Galvin is looking to trial out. It is, people have to be probably patient with Wexford and Paul and what he's trying to do and develop new players, because Turlough O'Brien is in his fourth, fifth season maybe, and everyone knows what he's about. But again, Carlo, tough place to go, Dr. Cullen Park, you'd have to fancy them taking Wexford.
Yeah, the only thing in Wexford's favour here, this is a local derby and they're home, and they wouldn't, Wexford wouldn't Wexford wouldn't worry about Carlow in any way.
No, absolutely, but I suppose that Carlow having the experience, maybe, like, I don't have a whole lot to go on bar the reports from last weekend, but just Carlow having been with their experience in Division 3 last year, having got promoted the year before, and just, I know it seems a little bit uncertain in Wexford at the moment, especially as you said, the loss to Antrim last weekend. So yeah, I go for Carlow, even though it is away from home. I go for Carlow.
Yeah, so. Okay, so we'll all go for Carlow. So there's your accumulator, one in each division. We're looking after you here. Right, that's always time for. We'll be back on Monday, and we will talk to you then. Good luck.
I'm not finished yet. It took me a long time to get here.
Both parents have spoken with each other, and they regret what happened. They've had a frank discussion with each other, and they're both of them are keen to now focus on getting back their county jerseys.
But these fellas will get such a shit shock next Saturday evening that we put them back in their houses for 10 years.